Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Going to be a fun one today, Ed. One of a classic cartoonist we're going to look at. But first, what's new?
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor. I'm serializing my Red Room comic strips up there right now. And issue one is almost completely up there. More than 6 pages are online as we speak. New strips every Tuesday. $3 gets you the archive. Going to start issue two serialization at the end of October, beginning of November.
Perfect time of year, man, to hop on Red Room.
That's it.
My latest comic, Octobrion in 1976, World's First Blacklight Comic, is in stores everywhere right now and selling fast. This is printed with fluorescent ink, so it reacts under a blacklight, and it features the underground 60s Russian superhero Octobrion versus Robot Stalin to save the world. So if you like unusual comics, you want this in your collection, and get it now, because it is selling.
Yeah, man. I see people online every day, man, talking about how they're sad they can't get a copy of the local comic shop anymore or something.
All right. Today we're going to look at Jim Steranko's At the Stroke of Midnight.
Classic horror strip. Where did it originally appear?
Tower of Shadows, number one. It was also then reprinted in Vampire Tales, number two, in black and white. We'll talk a little bit about that. The copy that I'm going to show mostly today is from Captain America Special Edition number one. There are two issues of this. Yeah. The second one reprints his romance story, which was like his last Marvel Comics work. So kind of a neat way to find affordable copies of some really big-time Jim Steranko comics, which are a little bit expensive and hard to track down now. This was one of his later stories at Marvel as well. And there were some fights with Stan Lee about this story, fighting over the title, fighting over some of the text. And one of the reasons Steranko kind of moved away from comics, you know, he was doing a lot of different work, and if he was going to get a headache at the comics office, it was already the least paying job.
Right.
So, you know, he kind of moved on to Hollywood and book covers and illustration and self-publishing and all these different ventures that held his interest. But one of the more interesting comics that he did produce.
This strip was highly influential and much talked about, like say the Simonsons and the Millers, like they would cite this as being an important comic strip for them. And like, I just want to sort of just bolster the importance of it or whatever. The first time I read it and had access to it was in my trusty Bible, Comics by Les Daniels, right? And check out this printing.
Yeah, this I'm glad you have this, Ed. I'm going to show, because there's at least 3 versions of this story in terms of printing. The original publication was your typical 4-color printing on newsprint.
Colored by Steranko, so get that if you can.
Yeah, and I'll show some of those on screen. But whenever it was in the black and white magazine, then, you know, I don't know if Steranko did it or not, but the screen tones and things were applied as thoughtfully as the colors.
Yeah.
Let's say that. So I don't know if it was Steranko's hand or not, but it was a really interesting version and looked great in black and white. This one obviously is, you know, kind of a smaller reproduction, probably not the best reproduction, but it does give you a pretty good sense of that black and white quality, which is high, you know, and I guess he must have at least overseen it if he didn't do it himself.
Yeah, I would bet he did it. And there's like a lot of places where there is no screen tone to just make sure that those panels pop.
Yes, a very bold graphic choice and one that was not typically used at Marvel Comics at the time. So again, certainly some influence, if not hands-on completely. And I'll pull out a couple of those and put on screen throughout the video for comparison's sake. You mentioned this being influential to a lot of artists and different artists talking about it. One of the first professional artists I met was Ernie Steiner.
Yeah.
And he kind of gave me a crash course in comics, gave me a sample script to work on, stuff like that. Showed me this story as an example of storytelling. And, you know, some of the storytelling that Steranko does in here, it did influence a generation.
And art-wise, I mean, this is coming out of, like, you know, the Warren magazines and shit. Like, this is a EC Comics inspired, like, horror host.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
It's coming from that tradition. And many, many shades of Krigstein in
the
storytelling.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Final note on this cover page. You know, it is written and illustrated by Steranko. This coloring for this comic edition is weird. Yeah, I don't know like what it. This is. It looks like it's markers, or watercolors, or Doc Martin, or some combination of those three. This whole book is that way, and I don't really understand what they're drawing from. I can't imagine they commission somebody to recolor this stuff, but also, like, these aren't color guides that are being reproduced. So I don't really know what this is.
This is, like, added value. Baxter paper is like, the new incentive to buy more expensive comics. So they equate this with better when you and I know the truth.
I think it is a blue line method.
No, it definitely is.
You know, I think
is.
They're
yeah,
experimenting with that. You know, some of the indie publishers, this would have been in the 80s when this came out. So you had, like, your indie publishers like Pacific and Eclipse using those kinds of methods, which yeah. did produce a more, I don't know, complex kind of style. So I think that's what they're experimenting with. I don't know whose hand this is. So start out, these two people are approaching this kind of mansion, haunted house-like thing on the hill. Pretty classic, iconic horror movie visuals. One thing to note is Steranko's great use of lighting here, as we see the figures reverse silhouetted with the headlights from the car in yellow, and then you see their shadows in silhouette as you see the headlight hitting kind of the cliff wall that they're about to ascend.
Right.
And the moon, man. Use the moon as often as you can. We're going to see lots of moons in this story. What's better than a big circle for a design object to put in your composition?
Yeah, and very rarely do I suggest having that circle repeat on the page, but this is like one of the few exceptions where it kind of works, like sort of at the climax of our story here, man.
So we see the couple, they're ascending that staircase that seems to go on forever and ever. One of the techniques that he does throughout this is playing with these panels that continue, you know, that cross panel borders and gutters, and sometimes for time effects. You know, I think he does some different things with that. You'll see the face here as an example of kind of an unusual treatment of that, you know, like breaking up that panel. Probably when you say Bernie Kriegstein, things like this have to come to mind.
Yeah, and it's a good use. I don't think it's not just a gimmick. Because it's about the ellipsis. Like, it's like these panels, like the gutter is the ellipsis where it's breaking up that sentence. Because this is an indecisive schmuck guy. And when you break up a simple sentence like that, it kind of helps sell the character to me.
Yeah, he's stammering almost as yeah. he talks.
Yeah. Amazing reference usage for the interior of this Victorian mansion.
Yeah, I was just going to point out, as they enter this, you get to see kind of these foreground, him playing with space and him playing with all the architectural interior design.
Dude, when we get, you know, to the next page, like, I have to imagine that he was able to, like, visit, I don't know, a museum or some old Frank Lloyd Wright house or something, because there's some geography that works,
yeah.
you know?
Also great, like the twisted up limb of the tree in front of the moon there. Another one of those horror movie staples. You know, it's almost that visual language of those kinds of horror movies. Same with the crow being in the foreground, a symbol of death in a lot of ways.
Right.
And the story is, this is a husband and a wife. The wife is very domineering to the point of caricature. It's a bit overdone in some ways, I think. But they are at this rich uncle's house who just died recently because they believe he had a treasure there.
Yeah.
Had some wealth stashed somewhere. So they are there to clean that out.
A lot of this second-by-second storytelling with the figures.
Yeah, and a lot of these kind of cool compositions, like this little very thin panel, but you get this extreme distance between the couple. So very thoughtful in how he's using space in that regard. And then I would also call attention to the blacks. Mm-hmm. That was something that stood out to me. Whenever I was introduced to this story, it would have been around the time of Frank Miller doing Sin City. So I love this kind of, like, really stark black and white. Steranko's doing that in this story.
Yeah, he's a guy who would set up models and usually use himself a lot, but this is like the one time since this guy's like a simp freaking Peckerwood, it ain't gonna look like Steranko. He saves that for Nick Fury, you know, when he uses himself. But these characters are acting, and I'm sure he's setting up one of his go-go dancer girlfriends or whatever to pose this stuff out. This is one of the geographical things that I'm talking about. We're, like, first off, amazing backgrounds. Amazing.
Yeah, we looked at his Outland, and I feel like you can see some of what he does in Outland he's figuring out here with these kind of extensive backgrounds and backgrounds that'll constitute like a whole series of panels, backgrounds, you know, really elaborate, almost an animation technique or something. We see that a lot in that Outland adaptation in Heavy Metal.
But like, you know, this section going up, like it's this, and you still see the same window. That's why I'm like, this guy was able to look at something. He had access to something, because I can't imagine this just comes out of your mind.
Yeah, this is setting his character, right?
It totally. It would
be the cliche kind of thing that's overused, but really applied here in this case.
Very unfortunate color right there. Let me...
Yeah, that's not great. This is a very strange, like, the color in this edition is very odd.
Yeah, but it's also of that time period, man. It was a lot of that kind of... But you see in the black and white, they had like a nice dark screen tone, but you could at least see the damn face.
The black and white version of this story is very strong. I actually considered that we would just do it, but I'll put it on screen. All of these settings are amazing, though.
Yeah.
You know, this is going into his library, and that's where we learn that this guy was obsessed with time and trying to manipulate time in a way to get to immortality, right? To live forever. But that's what you're seeing in here. And so it's black magic and Satan in the 15th century and black art and demonology, skull in the foreground, weird symbol on the door. Definitely, playing with all of these horror motifs. The kind of eerie portrait paintings, the keychain with all the different keys. It's all here. If you made a list of like, what's your classic movie tropes or visual tropes for a horror story, they're all here.
Right.
The clock, you know?
Yeah, it's a very gothic tale. They would describe this as, I'm sure.
And back again to the way he's stacking these figures or arranging them, there's such a distance between them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is with him because of the promise of this fortune, really.
Yeah, and when you get to the caricature stuff, it's her saying, like, I'm going to be rich. I mean, we're going to be rich.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I almost want to, like, cover, you know, the big climactic page. Short story, 7 pages total. But here we are. They find this this door, and they can't figure out how to open this door. The keys don't work and stuff. And in the process of trying to open it, she pricks her finger, and a single drop of blood, and talk about your subtle storytelling, falls onto the door, and it instantly opens.
Right.
So some blood was the key to unlocking that door. And at this point, is they're kind of thinking about what's in there and what are they seeing? We get this flashback panel where we see that this meek kind of guy, he pushed his uncle off the cliff. You know, his uncle bound in a wheelchair, pushed him off the cliff, and that's why his uncle was dead and they're standing in this, you know, and he's inheriting this house.
Right.
The wife found her stash of treasures and is super excited and happy about it. But whenever they turn and look back through the door, lo and behold, it's not the old study anymore. Now they're back in...
1800s, they say, the 18th century.
18th century, and they are in the middle of the French Revolution waiting to have their heads cut off, you know, their royalty in this chamber of treasures, and the executioner's waiting on them.
Yep, and the executioner is the uncle.
Yeah.
The old uncle.
Then they begin to scream.
That's probably the oddest looking image panel in the entire thing. It's very... unsettling because anatomically it just it's a mess.
If you added your tracing paper and drew out this thing, you don't want to see where that eyeball is.
Right. Yeah, it's very sloth and Goonies.
That's
kind
what
of
I was
gimmick.
Thinking, yes.
So like this, the moon thing, and I learned this by sort of screwing up stuff on my own page. You always have to break up that circle, because if you don't on a page, it dominates the image. And you can do that one time, but if you do it several times, it really hurts your composition of a page, man. Like I've learned that the hard way. So super smart to break up that moon, especially if you're going to repeat it. Wow. Look at this, man. Like, just use everything, every color in your Crayola crayon box, why don't you? And look at how it looks in the, you know, obviously that's real small. Maybe we could find the bigger image of that in the black and white, but that's, you know, that's like probably like an ink wash photostat screened out.
It's worth noting that this stuff gets reproduced several times in this kind of format, right? Like because this is an important comic,
yeah.
You see it reproduced everywhere, but it speaks to the idea that like the importance of this comic is in its storytelling. It's right. Not necessarily in the fine illustration, even though the illustration is fine, but that's not the draw. The allure of this is this approach to storytelling.
Exactly.
That's extremely atypical of what Marvel was doing at the time. And still, I mean, comics don't look like this today. So, you know, a very unusual comic in terms of the storytelling.
For sure. Absolutely. The storytelling is greater than the sum of its parts because the story is very basic. The art is dope. Like I'm super down with the art. I love the stark black and whites, but yeah. It's the Krigstein-like storytelling, you know. It hasn't been since Master Race that we've seen pages broken up this way. And it almost seems like an act of defiance against everything else that was going on at that time. Maybe, you know, Steranko saw some dictum that, like, can have no pages more than 9 panels, and he's challenge accepted.
Steranko certainly stood out as being different, so it would make sense to me that he would look around at comics and, you know, his peers and be like, well, what isn't being done? What don't I see? What could I do that would make my stuff stand out even more? Certainly an artist that seemed conscious of that part.
Yep.
And I think, you know, the other component's Hollywood. Like, he's done a lot of work in Hollywood. I think it was starting to ramp up at this time. I think he's probably, you know, drawing from that influence his whole career. And this is a chance to really kind of play with some of those ideas.
Fun story to look at. Super important for our inaugural horror month here on Cartoonist Kayfabe, man. But I'm tapped.
Yep.
All right. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next vids are available. We are on that race to 30,000 subscribers. So make sure you jump on board. Octobrion is in stores right now. Going fast. Going super quick. It's been sold out of many comic shops, and it's unlikely that they're going to be able to get new copies because it's being sold out at the printer level. I mean, at the publisher level at this point.
Yeah, if you're a comic shop, reorder those now.
Patreon.com/EdPiskor is where I'm serializing my Red Room comic strip to early adopters. It'll see a print edition in 2021, but if you can't wait, $3 will get you the archive and access to every single page that I put up there. New strips every Tuesday.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them the marching orders, dude.
Read more comics.